Ladies and gentlemen, a warm welcome from my side. Thanks for joining the Q1 Lenzing Investor call. Thanks for your interest. Q1 2021. A very successful start in the year, and in some way, maybe even an inch better than what we could have anticipated still some weeks back. If you compare the market situation that we face at this moment in time and compare this to just 10 months back, it feels like a different world. Q1, very strong market environment in general. Revenue came in with 489 million, up a bit less than 5% versus the same period last year. If you remember last year, we were slightly, but only slightly impacted by COVID due to our activities in Nanjing. In Europe and in the rest of the world, we didn't have yet any impact. Specialty share, and Thomas will speak later about the adapted definition. We're now at 73% versus the 72% that we had same period last year. EBITDA, also very strong reflection of the positive price and demand development, but still also, I think, reflecting the positive work that we continued to do last year on the cost side, 95 million compared to 69 million of last year, more than a third better than the same period last year. Net result of the minorities at 28 million and earnings per share at 1.06 euros. We will speak later on about the outlook, and we will speak later on about the reconfirmation of the strategic mid-term targets 2024. We will also focus in depth on the two big projects, both on time and in budget. As you could read from the press release yesterday, we decided to make the next substantial step to transform our portfolio in the direction of specialties by investing, as was part of our strategic plans, 200 million euro in Asia, both at our Indonesian and our Nanjing site, which will drive our specialty growth, but which will also have a very substantial impact on our sustainability targets. Still, some words on Hygiene Austria. This was a topic that I think kept us, particularly for those who are closer in Austria, busy in the first couple of weeks in March and April. By now, the project, I would say we have done what could be done. We ensured that the quality of the mask was checked and assured. We ensured the recertification. We ensured that top management would be replaced. I think also recognizing what we can do, we then decided to actually transfer our shareholding to Palmers, and as such, then also ensure the continuation of the business. Thomas will also go a bit more in depth that we have written off all on the investments that we still had in our books as well as a loan in the first quarter. For us, subject closed, and we move on. Staying on the theme of sustainability and our sustainability strategy. Lenzing has been one of the first companies now who has presented in detail our sustainability strategy at the annual general meeting. We went with our shareholders in quite some depth into the approach of sustainability, the way sustainability is for Lenzing a core value, that we are sort of balancing the interest of shareholders, the impact on the people we interact with, as well as the impact on the planet. It is also the main business and innovation driver, and per se, really is sort of a bit the guiding torch. The translation of our sustainability strategy was done over the last two years into 18 discrete targets that we have set ourselves, supporting a good two handful of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. For most of the targets, we have by now not only clear responsibility, but also detailed roadmaps how we want to accomplish them. Here you see illustrative our decarbonization roadmap. Those roadmaps are then translated for each site. We have targets per site. What we would like to symbolize here is we know by now in great detail how we will accomplish a -60% on CO2 per metric ton of product sold. So we know how we're going to accomplish our 2024 target, that we are very well on track. We know how we're going to accomplish our 2030 target, that's all part of our plans. And we also know a bit more than that to how to go to -60. In all transparency, to reach carbon neutrality by 2050, there is quite something that I think still needs to happen in the lensing community, but also with our suppliers, but also I think when it comes to new technology and changes in the total energy mix and landscape. One of the elements of such a roadmap was the investment that we announced yesterday. The total of the 200 million will bring the total Indonesian site into an Ecovero, Ecoviscos site. In essence, we will triple our capacity for Ecovero, a product which is in very high demand. We will bring to Nanjing Modal, we will increase our capacity there by a good third versus what we have today installed. We will be the first wood-based cellulosic manufacturer who has a site now in China that is completely independent from coal. We will have a gas-based cogeneration unit that will help us to support the site with steam as well as electricity. And in total, on both sites, we will reduce the carbon footprint by 320,000, and we will accomplish by focusing in Purwakarta on recovery of sulfur emissions, recovery of sulfur products, to reduce our sulfur emissions by 50%, and that is the single biggest step to accomplish our desulfurization targets of our sustainable development goals. So that's what you see on the next slide. In essence, this investment is a big step for our Score 10 target. It is strongly accretive to EBITDA as well as to ROCE. I think it's some of the very good business cases, but it's also very conducive to our sustainability targets, as I elucidated. So, sustainability presented to the shareholder meetings, I think we have roadmaps that are very actionable. This is not a vision, this is detailed roadmaps per site, and the step that we just announced yesterday was a next markedly step in this direction. Looking a little bit at the market. Now, if we look at the downstream market on retail level, we see again two pictures. We see on the one hand that Europe and the US, we see retail traffic still being impacted, Europe the most. We see that in the US, clothing sales do a bit better than retail traffic, suggesting on the one hand that the purchase per person when they go to shop is slightly better than the past, and that online is covering for some share. So there we are down some 5-10% versus the same period versus pre-COVID level. If you look at China, there we are at pre-COVID level, and in Europe we are still quite a bit behind. What does this mean for the demand and price picture in our industry? In essence, we saw all fiber classes in terms of price, in terms of demand, in very positive territory. However, we also saw for all relevant fiber classes somewhat a peak in beginning March, mid-March, and since then slight erosion of prices, however, still on a high level. So in March, we had 15,600 on viscose for textile in non-woven application, up at 16,000. Very healthy operating rates, again, at sort of the five-year average, and inventory levels even below the level that we typically see with 12 days. Dissolved wood pulp prices at a very high level of 1,100. In essence, I think what you need to take away, we had in the whole industry, I think, a pretty healthy appetite and belief that autumn-winter collection will be close to back as normal. At the same time, we had a pretty empty inventory along the industry chain, and to some extent on the commodities, also some trading effects. I think some of that we will see in Q2 and Q3 easing. We will still have, in our opinion, healthy demand, but I think some of the inventory buildup will again, you know, get reduced. If we look at the conversion margin and theoretical profit, viscose is in healthy territory, but given the very high dissolved wood pulp prices that we have now on a conversion margin, we're just back at, I would say, at a typical level of a good year. Not as bad as what we had in most of 2019 and 2020, but also not anymore the highs that we had in January, February, or in most part of 2017 and 2018. If you look at the specialty price fiber development, please don't forget you have here a mixed picture, including the Lenzing Viscose Specialties, but also TENCEL Modal as well as TENCEL Lyocell. You always have a six-month rolling average. Lenzing Specialties sales much more stable. You see here less of an aggressive price uptick. I think that's also because there was much less of a price reduction. However, we do see that both in Modal as Lyocell, prices are also picking up. We're increasing prices because demand is very healthy. One of the things that we are particularly pleased is the developing on the branding. If you also look at our website, you see that next to TENCEL, we're putting more effort now also on the repositioning of ECOVERO, as well as very climate conscious products in nonwoven, and that we are stressing the word to buy TENCEL quite actively. Very recently, we were pleased with the coverage that we achieved with Red Carpet Green Dress Corporation for the Oscars. One of the main presenters, Marlee Matlin, wore a dress from TENCEL Lux. We received enormous social media coverage because Vivienne Westwood, as well as the organizers and then many also of the tabloids, spoke about TENCEL Lux. I think that brought us enormous publicity. If you look at the next page, you're at the other side of the spectrum. Here we don't speak about haute couture, but we are very pleased with the branding partnerships that we're getting. We are here at Times Square. You see an H&M advertisement that was going there for more than a week, where they're using TENCEL Lyocell as a key differentiator. We don't pay for this advertisement. I think you can imagine that one week coverage on Times Square doesn't come cheap for H&M, but for us it was free advertisement. Market friendly, branding good progress. Some word on the big expansion projects. I will first do Brazil, and then I will hand over to Thomas to speak about Thailand. Our joint venture in Brazil, in Minas Gerais, and the construction of the 500,000 ton dissolved wood pulp line is progressing very nicely. We are on time, we are in budget, and we continue to be positive that in the first half of next year, we will be starting up that line. You see on the next pages a couple of impressions on how the site develops. It's sort of a helicopter view. For those of you who know the Lenzing site, that site is bigger than the total Lenzing site. We speak more than 2 sq km that the total site is large. On the next slide, you see one of the core elements of a pulp plant, the boiler section, the huge biomass boiler, recovery boiler. You see the stack, 75-meter high, and the recovery boiler and biomass boiler steam drums were lifted on the week precise as we have planned it 2 years ago when we made the project plan. That's all despite the COVID circumstances that we have in Brazil. Next page, you see the wastewater treatment, our effluent treatment plant, also a very important part of the plant. Also from an ESG perspective, I think essential. We use a tertiary treatment effluent strategy there that I think gives us enormous peace of mind that we will not only live up to the local regulations, but also to the very high Lenzing standards. On the next page, you see the water intake at the Araguari River progressing well, as well as then on the next page, the water intake plateau areas with all the substations, because this plant will be a huge producer of green energy, and that is more or less the interface where our substation will then be faced with the CEMIX, so the public grid substation, we will then deliver the green energy into the grid. Thomas, may I hand over to you for Thailand?
Thank you, Stefan. Let me continue with the lyocell expansion project in Thailand. In a nutshell, the project is on time and in budget. The key facts are, of course, unchanged to our last presentation. So it will be a 100 kilotons lyocell fiber plant. It will be the largest of its kind. And of course, it will boost our specialty ratio accordingly. CapEx unchanged with 400 million. The project is fully and on track, as I mentioned before, and ramp up is expected by the end of 2021. And the plant will be fully ramped up in the second half of 2022. Moving on to the next slide, there you can see an overview of the site. Let me start on the right side there with the wastewater treatment plant, of course, state of the art. Next to it, you have the pipe warehouse, then comes the production building, followed by the fiber warehouse. And in front of the fiber warehouse, you have the utilities plant. And in front of the production building, you see the technical warehouse, laboratory, and workshop. And for those who saw previous pictures of the project, actually, you will realize, a couple of buildings are already finished, and we made tremendous progress, actually, over the last couple of weeks. Moving on to the next page, actually, what you see there is our production building. As I already highlighted, quite a lot of progress over the last couple of weeks. So. Fully on time. Moving on to wastewater treatment plant. As I mentioned already, it's a state-of-the-art wastewater treatment plant, which is, of course, crucial with regards to sustainability. And last but not least, one more picture, actually, where you can see our fiber warehouse and the utilities plant. Overall, we are very confident that we will start up this plant in Q4 of this year. So let me move on now to our Q1 financials. And let me start with revenues. As already mentioned by Stefan, revenues came in with 489 million compared to 466 million the year before. That's an increase of about 5%, of course, driven by strong prices, but also by higher volume. Revenues that were contributed from the pipe side were a little bit lower, but nevertheless, we ended up with a 5% revenue increase. With regards to the group revenue by application, you see now that we are back on the pre-crisis level with 68% accounting for, or textile fibers accounting for 68%. And the non-woven fibers accounting for 32%. So that is basically as we saw it in Q1 2020. With regards to our specialties, also this was already highlighted by Stefan. Actually, we changed the way of how we calculate the ratio. You see it here, 73% of our total fiber revenue. I think this makes it a more meaningful number. Before we move on to earnings, I mean, maybe one more thing I would like to highlight is for those of you who looked at the P&L statement in detail, you will have realized that actually we changed the presentation of our profit and loss statement from the total cost method to cost of sales method. And I think that will quite be helpful with regards to transparency and comparability. Moving on now to earnings. Let me start with EBITDA there. EBITDA came in with 94.5 million compared to 69 the year before, so a massive increase of almost 37%. EBITDA margin now above 19% compared to less than 15% the year before, of course, driven by the strong price development in Q1. With regards to EBIT, of course, we see the same development there. I mean, EBIT increased from 30 million to 55, so basically the same increase in absolute numbers. Of course, in percentage terms, it increased significantly more. It's an increase of 85%, bringing EBIT margin to more than 11% compared to 6.4 the year before. And with regards to group net profit, actually, the quarter came in with slightly above 28 million compared to 22 million the year before. Earnings per share at 1.06 euro compared to 84 euro the year before. What you have to keep in mind when you take a look at the group net profit is, of course, the impairment of the Hygiene Austria investment and the loan. And, of course, you have to deduct the interest for the hybrid fund. Moving on to cash flow and trading working capital. As you can see here, I think very strong gross cash flow and operating cash flow. Operating cash flow came in with more than 110 million. CapEx was also very high in Q2, actually with 211 million. However, with the very strong operating cash flow, we could pay more than half of it out of the operating cash flow, bringing the free cash flow to a negative 99 million. But I think the graph tells all very strong improvement over the last couple of quarters. With regards to trading working capital, also I'm quite happy with the development there. In absolute numbers, we are at 381 million, slightly lower than by the end of 2020. Trading working capital in percent of annualized group revenue, of course, came down as well. Moving on to some balance sheet metrics, and let me start with net financial debt. Actually, net financial debt, according to IFRS, came in with 572 million compared to 471 million the year before. The increase, of course, out of the negative free cash flow. What you have to keep in mind when you look at net financial debt is, of course, that we fully consolidate our Brazilian joint venture. So if you adjust for the portion that is being guaranteed by our joint venture partner, Duratex, then actually the what we call the economic net financial debt came in with 411 million compared to 380 the year before. With regards to total assets, of course, an increase, quite some increase of more than 9%. That is, of course, driven by the huge capex we did in Thailand and in Brazil. Our adjusted equity now slightly below 2 billion euros. It's, of course, driven by the result, but also by the FX development and net financial debt, actually already mentioned. And to close it off, actually, with regards to our liquidity cushion, actually, at more than 2 billion euros, consisting of 1.2 billion in liquid assets and another 840 million in unused credit facilities. So I think overall, indeed, an excellent start into 2021. And with that, I hand back to Stefan for the outlook.
Thanks, Thomas. For the elucidation, the financials, if you look a bit into 21, what do we see? Number one, I think in general a strong market sentiment, but there remains COVID-19. And we see it very intensely at the moment in India, which is a big textile market, hits us less than other players in the industry. But the situation there is just a reminder how volatile and how difficult the situation still is, and we need to be careful in the way we just project whatever we face at the moment for the medium run. Long term, I think that is again a bit of a different picture. Now we have seen, we saw prices in March peaking. We expect prices to remain on a relatively high level, however not as high as March with 15,600. At the moment, prices are hovering slightly below the 1,500 RMB per ton level. Dissolved wood pulp prices we expect to remain strong. Will they stay on the 1,100 level? We need to see maybe still for this quarter, overall, some softening would not surprise us, but structurally, I think dissolved wood pulp is seeing, I think, very healthy demand. And I think with paper and paper pulp also being relatively strong, we expect prices in comparison to remain high. And that gives also a certain floor to viscose prices, which in general, I think, is for Lenzing very helpful. We spoke about Thailand and Brazil. That will continue to get our focus, as well as the new investment now in Indonesia and Nanjing. And we're making continuous improvement and operational excellence ongoingly as a focal priority for us. And we continue, as a consequence, also to help to get more efficiency out of the plants that we operate. We shared with you, with the full year result, a bit the key work plan, the key strategic milestones. Three of the decisions by now we have taken in the first 4 months of this year, the Modal expansion, as well as the expansion of Ecovero, and the steps to decarbonize our portfolio. Nanjing Prachinburi already announced. We also are in the process of starting up one big facility here on the raw material side in Lenzing that will contribute to carbon reduction, that we will communicate more about in the next couple of days. And, of course, a major milestone is the project finalization then at the fourth quarter of this year. Last slide, very familiar to you, our 2024 target. We would like to reemphasize our commitment and our firm belief that we will achieve these targets, 800 million in 2024, ROCE above 10%. With the strong cash flow that we observe now, I think the deleveraging is actually even less of a challenge than probably what we still would have expected beginning of last year when we announced the targets. Specialty share, maybe just with the redefinition that we have used, you might interpret this as this is not a very aggressive target. You're right, not a very aggressive target. I think we would be very surprised if we would not be very close to the 100% level at this moment in time with the, you know, with both the redefinition as well the decision that we've taken. Dissolved wood pulp integration on track, and the carbon emission I also spoke about, also very well on track. All in all, first quarter, strong start into the year 2021, helps after three very difficult quarters in 2020, strategically fully on track, execution-wise fully on track, and we look with quite some optimism into the year 2021. With that, we will open the floor for questions. Operator, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will begin the question and answer session. Please note that questions are only possible via telephone. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw your question, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who wishes to ask a question, please press star followed by one at this time. One moment for the first question, please. The first question is from the line of Christian Faitz, Kepler Cheuvreux. Your question, please.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for taking my question. I have one question for now. Can you explain a bit more in detail your investments in Asia, significantly improving the CO2 footprint in your two existing plants, plus the conversion to more specialty grades? Will these 200 million euro capex pretty much self-finance themselves via improved profitability or cash flow, or how much have you earmarked for the next 2 years for capex out of your normal capex plan?
Thanks, Mr. Feitz. I will speak a bit about the details of what we're doing, and then I will ask Thomas to speak a bit about the capex side. In essence, we are doing in Nanjing, we are converting a viscose line into a modal line. We are changing the energy footprint at the site. So those are the major steps that we are undertaking there. In Indonesia, we have, in essence, three major activities. The first one is actually reduce the sulfur emission. There is a so-called CAP plant that we need to build there that helps the CS2 consumption, will make the site much more efficient. Secondly, we will reduce the overall air emission level by running more things in cycle, as well as water emission by extending and professionalizing the wastewater treatment plan. At the same time, we are making the small modification that are then needed on top to produce on all lines Ecovero. So the full sites then in Nanjing, in Indonesia, as well as, of course, Austria, so all our three viscose sites will be EU Ecolabel compliant. Today it is only Nanjing and only Lenzing. And by doing that, we will have a very attractive business case for both of the sites. But as Thomas will say, it's not that, in essence, before we have converted the site, that the CAPEX is paid. But Thomas, maybe a couple of words on the CAPEX side.
On the CAPEX, I mean, actually, in total, we will spend around 200 million at the sites in Nanjing, in China, and in Indonesia. Actually, the CAPEX will be spread out, of course, in 21, 22. With regards to China, actually, we will spend the majority of the CAPEX already this year and only a smaller portion next year. And in Indonesia, it is the other way around. The reason for that is actually in China, we already started preparing actually for this CAPEX project already some weeks or months ago. So actually, yeah, in total, 200 million. And of course, it will then later on boost profitability accordingly.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
The next question is from the line of Markus Meyer, Baader Bank. Your question, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, gentlemen. Two questions from my side as well. Firstly, again, on Hygiene Austria, you said you fully wrote down your investment. Maybe you can help us to understand what the total magnitude of this write-down was in Q1. I have not seen here something that maybe I overlooked it. And secondly, coming back to Christian's question on this 200 million investment, still that maybe it's better to understand what is the return from the CO2 rights you save if you take then the current price versus the price then which is heading towards 65 euros per ton. That's in Europe, but I guess this will be also the case globally. And also, what is the return from this positive product mix effect and also increased capacity? Any flavor here would totally help.
Okay, maybe Thomas first on Hygiene Austria, and I will do then the investment.
On the Hygiene Austria, actually, you will find in the financial result, actually, the impact out of the impairment of the investment. The investment amounted to 4.5 million euros, and the loan that was granted to Hygiene Austria of another 2 million. So actually, in the financial result, you find 6.5 million negative for Hygiene Austria in Q1. And with that, actually, 100% impaired, so everything fully written off.
Moving to your next question in terms of the investment, please understand we don't give the level of detail that you're looking for as a breakdown. What we would like to guide, however, on is that the business case of the conversion of the lines is an not only EBITDA but also ROCE accretive business case and is contributing to the targets that we have set ourselves. So independent of the ESG impact, it's just by, you know, the pricing deltas that we can accomplish, the cost reduction that we can accomplish, as well as the improvement in product mix, it's in total a very interesting business case.
May I still add on question on this one? On the phasing of these returns, let's say we assume, let's say, number X, and split it up over the years, is it then fair to assume that the majority of the returns, the run rate out of that, is then really taking off in 2023 and 2024? Or is this the phasing more back end loaded after 2024?
Please assume that by 2023 you will have the full savings.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Isha Sharma, Stifel Europe. Your question, please.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one is on branding. Do you receive any co-branding requests also initiated now from mainstream brands since your ramped up co-branding efforts and your recent effort like eShop, do you expect it to also support your popularity among the retail brands? That would be the first one. The second is that your scope 1 and 2 CO2 emissions are by far the highest in Indonesia. And as per your press release yesterday, the conversion of the Purwakarta site means a reduction of 120,000 tons. Just wondering, what further steps can you take at the site to reduce emissions further? And maybe the last one, could you tell us what has exactly changed in your definition of specialties? And when you say it is probably not too bullish to assume that you move towards 100%, can we expect that already by end of 2022? Thank you.
Okay, if we start with the first one, yes, we do receive requests for co-branding from also, you know, very well-known brands. We are making, I think I showed it also at the annual result presentation, some of the detailed brand statistics. We have launched on our eShop or on the Tencel webpage, the word to buy, where you can now click through immediately to the eShops of our customers. That was launched very recently, and in the first couple of weeks, we already have now more than 10,000 click-throughs onto those sites. So I think that's a very promising development that not only serves our, let's say, our customers or downstream customers because we revert business to them, but it is also, I think, giving us over time a good information about the people who are interested in Tencel and gives them, from an end consumer perspective, the ability to find Tencel products without a lot of hassle. Second question, Indonesia, what we're doing now is we're actually taking biogenic material and will change the mix in the fuel boiler. The majority at that stage is still going to be coal. Our vision is that over time we will be able to run also Indonesia with a very high share of biogenic material, but that is something that needs to grow over time, where also then the one or the other adjustment needs to be made on the boilers. With respect to specialty definitions, I would like to ask Robert maybe to do that. What I'd said before is, in terms of the sheer number, if you now take whole Indonesia, and Ecovero is for us a specialty product, Nanjing runs on Ecovero and Modal, there is hardly anything in our commodity definitions left. That's why I mean, I think the 75%, as we formulated with the decisions that we have now taken, feels conservative, is conservative, will be overaccomplished. But Thomas, maybe on the definition.
Actually, what we change is only the way how we calculate it. So actually now you see the specialty revenues in percent of total fiber sales, whilst in the past, actually, the calculation was based on total group revenue. And anyway, in the presentation, you have all the information, actually, to redo the calculation as we did in the past. So if you do the math, then you would end up with around 64% according to the old calculation method. So the
Perfect.
Definition of
so
specialty hasn't changed at all.
Right.
The next question is from the line of Sebastian Bray, Berenberg. Your question, please.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. They would focus on the Modal investment. Could you remind me of what Lenzing's current Modal capacity is and how much viscose capacity will be removed as a result of the 35 kiloton investment. I also have a few questions on S&L cost over the next 2 or 3 years, but I'll stop with that one. Thank you.
Modal, we are adding 35,000 tons. We have about 110,000 capacity at this moment in time. I think as a rule of thumb, you can assume that a bit less than twice of that is being taken out of operation on the commodity viscose side.
That is very helpful. Thank you. If I may follow up on the personnel cost development over the next 2 or 3 years, do you have any idea or just percentage guidance of how many extra people are going to be working in these plants, or is that already going to be visible in the P&L for 2021?
So if you take the cost, let's say the personnel cost in Nanjing and in Indonesia will not change as a consequence of those investments, so that you can assume stable. The additional personnel that will be added is particularly in Thailand as well as in Brazil. So there we will have, of course, the startup costs, as well as then as soon as the plant goes operational, also the personnel costs that will come in there. We don't guide now on that detail exactly on the number of people that we would add there. One of the things that, however, I would like when you speak about personnel costs to, because I think that's an important part of guidance, last year we didn't pay any employee boni. That is not a typical part of the personnel, let's say, cost development. So whoever models personnel costs should assume a reasonable bonus structure. And that is something that 2021 is at least part of, that we include in our guidance.
Thank you. The last one, just on quick, any update on Tencel supply demand? It looks quite decent for the next year or two. Is that a fair assessment, and has anything changed on your view on the supply additions?
No, nothing has changed. I think we feel very positive that we can commercialize our we call them internally T3, in our Tencel lyocell plant in Thailand. That I think there the commercialization makes great progress. We feel very healthy demand, and we remain very positive on this.
Okay, that is helpful. Thank you for taking my questions, and congratulations on the results.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bray.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone. The next question is from the line of Teresa Schönwald from Raiffeisen Bank International. Your question, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I would like to ask my questions one by one, and the first one is actually a follow-up on the lyocell demand-supply balance and market overall. So could you please update us on the expected capacity addition on the market overall, and also with respect to Sartorius' recently announced plans to add 500,000 ton of capacity by 2025.
We expect this year that our capacity will come on stream. Next to that, in terms of nameplate, we expect something north of 100K T being added by various competitors. I already commented in our full year results on the announcement of Satory. Satory will come into the market. They're already there with a 30 KT line. I think in itself, whatever Satory plans, you would need to ask Satory. But what we have seen, at least historically, that not all of the announcement and all of the timelines should be taken with exact precision as being announced. And I think if you go back to also the viscose announcements historically, some of the pulp announcements, I think that's to be taken into consideration, but it's a very reputable, serious company that for sure will be there in lyocell. But I think on that question, I remain very optimistic about our ability to to, you know, keep ground, retain margins by the work that we do in branding, in proliferating our SKUs, in driving down the cost curve ourselves, and we are committed to continue the investment path in lyocell ourselves.
Got it. Thank you. The next, rather under the dissolved wood pulp side, Stora Enso also announced its exit from the business. Is this already taken into account in your comments about the expected price stability in the softwood pulp? Does this change the picture, improve the picture for your own investment?
Stora Enso is a relatively small player. We speak here somewhat 300 kt plus minus, depending on how they swing into paper or not. It will slightly help the so-called softwood pulp, the more the long fiber pulp that we are today commercializing from our site in Paskov. In the grand scheme of things, the exit of Stora Enso, I think, has no implication on the market. It's too small in comparison to what it is coming. But I think overall, next year, a lot of pulp is coming into the market from us, but also from Bracell, who have a huge investment also in Brazil. Structurally, we believe that the dissolved wood pulp market, in a long term, a $900 plus minus is a reasonable market guidance.
And my last one refers to your change in the reporting format, and you mentioned a better comparability with peers. Did you rather look to the pulp side of the industry? Which peers in general did you have in mind?
No specific peers actually in mind. However, I think when you take a look at the profit and loss statement, you will hardly find, or you will not find, a lot of companies using the total cost approach compared to cost of sales. So actually, especially in the specialty chemicals industry, basically all of them are doing it according to cost of sales. And with the cost of sales method, actually you have significantly more insight, because you have a gross profit margin, which you won't have using the other format.
Understood. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Nicolas Kneip, Wiener Privatbank. Your question, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. First one on EBITDA margin, or let's say margins in general. You had a quite significant improvement in Q1. Do you expect this level is sustainable throughout the year, or do you think that as conversion margin is coming down a little, also that EBITDA margin will come back a little in throughout the year? And then secondly, on CapEx again, maybe as you expected earlier, before the new projects in Indonesia and China, CapEx for the full year of around 800 million. Can we expect now something around 900 million maybe? Thank you.
Okay. We don't guide on EBITDA margin, and I think in our industry it's not particularly helpful, given that you have very few materials that can have, you know, quite some movement in the one or the other direction. So we don't guide on EBITDA margin, but we guide a bit on EBITDA, and I think, but we leave it with that. Q1 in general was a very good quarter, let me put it that way. It was a very good quarter. CapEx, Thomas?
On the CapEx, actually, when we released the full year numbers for 2020, actually, we guided CapEx on 800 million. As per today, I would say I expect CapEx in the range of 800 to 850. The projects that we announced yesterday in China and in Indonesia, actually, they were already basically reflected in our guidance we gave by year end. But as you could see from the Q1 numbers, projects are making very good progress. Therefore, 800 to 850.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from the line of Isha Sharma, Stifel Europe. Your question, please.
Hi, just to follow up on the guidance, since you mentioned that you expect the price of viscose as well as dissolving wood pulp to stay at a relatively high level, and the fact that earlier you had mentioned that there is always a bit of a lag effect when it comes to price increases, so what we see in Q1 probably fully reflects in Q2. Are you comfortable with where consensus is at with the 400 million for the full year EBITDA?
Again, please understand, we have issued a guidance very explicitly that we will reach at least the level of 2019, so the pre-COVID level, which was a bit south of 330. We don't give additional, let's say, guidance on top of that.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I would like to hand back to Stefan Dobrotsky for closing remarks.
Thank you very much, everybody, for your interest in the group. I think COVID remains something that gives us headache. We need to be very vigilant and careful, as we have now more than 10,000 people at our construction sites, next to the 7,000 people that we need to take care of. We are very happy that our people in India are safe, and we are also supporting their actively the local community. That also means for yourself, stay safe, be careful. Let's all get healthy through this last, hopefully last, intense period of COVID. And thanks for your interest in our group.